Hi, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs is broadcast live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/wanderingdms and youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. Today on Wandering DMs, we're going to debrief on our amazing experiences at GaryCon 18. You know, we get to play with some of our personal heroes, run tournaments and design playtests, and sit in on seminars with some of the elite of D&D gaming history. All that and more today on Wandering DMs.
Before we get into today's discussion, I will remind everyone that, as always, at the end of the show, we'll be hosting our after-party chat. There's a live video chat that Dan and I host for all of our patrons, and you can join in by becoming a patron. Just visit patreon.com/wanderingdms, join at any tier, and you'll get an invite to our Discord server. Get your account set up over there during the show, and maybe about 10 minutes or so after the show, we'll be there to talk to you all live.
We love that every single week. We have just the best patrons. And for example, thanks to Bacrius for checking in that we are currently live on Twitch and YouTube and Restream. Thank you so much for checking on that. So I'm just going to come out of the box and say, for me, last week at GaryCon was clearly the highlight of my entire gaming life. I could not believe how amazing The sessions were just 24/7. I personally never had a bum no session was bad for me. I felt just entirely enthusiastic about every single minute that happened for 5 days straight. And I'm still buzzed and trying to process all the amazing things I got to do. Now I will say that, just for viewers' sake, this particular show, One thing we're not going to talk about is our dungeon design dash playtests, because we have so much to chat about that. That's going to be a separate episode next week. So please tune in again in 1 week's time for the dungeon design playtest wrap session. But this is everything else about GaryCon other than that.
Yes. Dan gets more enthusiastic about his description of GaryCon, I think, every time I hear him give it. So highlight of your gaming life. Holy cow.
Absolutely. Yeah. Easy call.
That's something. Wow. So even better than our first trip to GaryCon back in 2018? We went
2018. And the answer is absolutely yes. For me, easy call. I think I figured out how to set up my schedule better, among other things. And we didn't run games last time, Paul, right? So we did your normal trick of go to a con once, don't sign up as hosts just to see the lay of the land. So I actually was at least co-host of four different events, and I don't know if it's ever occurred to you, Paul, but I kind of love running D&D.
I've noticed that one. That's great. Yeah. Interesting. I remember in the 2018 trip, one of our big highlights was playing in that crazy game by Bill Webb with 28, 29 right. players or something stupid like that, right?
29.
That was wild. And that was definitely like a delirious moment for me, right? And I feel like conversely, I did not have an experience like that at this convention. So. Okay. My response is going to be a little more moderated, folks. It was a good con. I had a good time. Yeah, I think I could do it better, though.
Okay, great. There's the yin yang that you get on Wandering DMs. I will say, okay, just as briefly, I will say, remember, because I actually haven't thought about that 2018 game with Bill Webb. But I distinctly remember this moment a couple of minutes in with all these people. And I turned to Paul very quietly and go, "Is this good? I don't think this is good, is it?" I was like, "Yes, it is." I'm like, "Okay, all right, I'm convinced."
it was such an odd experience, and it really did, like, it was overwhelming. Frankly, it was overwhelming to the point where, like, it was a little troubling trying to process what the hell was happening exactly.
Yes.
You know, and And yeah, I think, you know, I think we both came away from it because we ended up playing in two of his games, right? And the first one was so freaking good, we immediately ditched our previously scheduled stuff to go into a second one. And then we're joking about how we were pretty sure we had just joined a cult.
Yeah, right. Yes. Yes. But let's talk about this year. Let's talk about 2026.
Yes.
So
yes.
How did you like our lodgings? Right. So we were staying in a totally different place last night.
That's a good point. I mean, the room itself was very nice. Well, we were in the Timber Lodge. The room itself was very nice, but it was a mile or two, whatever it was, away from the main convention area. Right. It was part of the same property, and they had shuttle buses. And there was a moment where I had this nice little flashback to one of my earliest convention experiences. When I was around 15, I begged my dad to send me to Gen Con, and he did. He took me to Gen Con. It was an incredible experience. I loved it so much, I insisted on going back. So the next year, I'm 16 years old, and dad has realized he does not want to spend, you know, a chunk of his vacation time to fly out with me to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and go to baseball games and shuttle me around, right? So, it was decided that I could go and stay by myself, and I stayed in, I think at that time they had housing. The cheapest housing was in a university dorm somewhere. I can't remember what college it was, but a dorm, right? So I rented this dorm room, and so I had this crazy feeling, right? Because you're in a dorm that's just full of people who are all going to Gen Con, and then they also, because they've filled this whole dorm with convention goers, they had shuttle buses, right? And so just like getting on the shuttle bus to go to the convention was having me flashback to 16-year-old Paul on probably one of my first ever, like, oh my gosh, I'm on a big trip all on my own kind of feeling.
That was
enjoyable, but that was a long rambling story for me to tell you, like, I'd rather be in the main hotel. I'd rather be able to just like walk down the stairs and go to the convention space. I don't want to get on a shuttle. What a pain in the butt. Okay. Even though it was running all the time, very easy to get on and off again. Running late into the night, no problems there. It's very convenient. Still, you know, it's a little extra. Whoops, I forgot book X suddenly becomes a money.
Yeah, that was the thing. Now, I probably have more, like, I take mass transit here in New York all the time, and I have way more appetite for it than anybody else that I know. So I thought the shuttle was perfectly fine. It took like 5 minutes to get back and forth. But yes, you did have to, you know, previously, if I was missing a book, I was just a couple minute walk away, just like walk over to the room, grab the thing, come back. And now you did have to put a little bit more planning into what you were grabbing and when you were going to be able to come back to, you know, cycle equipment or something like that during the day.
And now, I'll also point out, I know that you, and I know we're not really going to talk about the Dungeon Design Dash, but we did both run playtests of the adventure we wrote, and yours was held in a ballroom in the building where we were staying.
Right.
Which seems very convenient to me. Mine was held at a third location, also on the same property, but you had to, it was another shuttle ride, and it wasn't even one shuttle. So you had to take the shuttle from where we were staying to the main convention space, get off that shuttle, get onto another shuttle, take to where I was running the other game. Yeah, that was a real pain in the butt, and I think that attendance at my game suffered as a result, because that was definitely like the annex extra space.
Yeah.
Where they, we need more room to fit more games. I guess we'll shove into that area.
It's funny because when I first saw it on the schedule, it was listed as like the Mountain Chalet or something like that. And I know there were some other events that were like you had to pay extra funds to get into these. So I was like, Paul got into this like elite fancy palace place or something like that. And initially I was like, oh, good for him. Saturday, I had, multiple games actually just down the hallway from where we were staying in the Timber Lodge. And I had one table basically the whole day. One of the gentlemen, I think in my first game, was also in your situation, of having to, run a game in that same place, right after my game, and therefore he had to leave early. So I also lost players in some sense who were leaving my game in order to be there. So that third place that third property that I never laid eyes on was not super great. But what I do want to praise, like, I like where we were staying. So granted that we weren't in the main lodge, to be clear, the Timber Lodge is kind of, and I wish I regret now that I didn't take photos from outside. It's kind of like, you know, set up for families with small kids. So you drive up and there's a giant teddy bear. There's like a 15-foot teddy bear sculpture outside, and you go inside and there's like teddy bears and there's like the moose lounge and, you know, there's like kiddie bowling and kind of stuff like that. But the main feature is that in the center of the place, there's an indoor water park, like a fairly elaborate indoor water park. And initially they've got, you know, swoopy tubes that shoot out of the building into a pool and you swim back in and all this kind of stuff. And so when Paul and I were preparing, Paul was like, you know, we're staying in a place with a water park. Pack your swim trunks, right? And I'm like, I will definitely pack my swim trunks. I've packed my swim trunks. But just so you know, inevitably, any hotel I have ever stayed at where they have a swimming pool, I get there and it's always closed. 100% of the time, mm-hmm. It's always closed. So we get there and the indoor water park has been closed specifically for Dairy Con. Because space is at such a premium that they're having to set up gaming tables. And I was kind of walking around late night, the night before the con, Wednesday night, and they were having to set up additional gaming tables in the Timber Lodge meeting rooms, in the hallways, and also in the water park. And so you can see that they've got at the bottom of the photo we're looking at around the left-hand side, they've got a bunch of gaming tables. But the really top-tier thing that they did is right in the center of the water park, they set up all weekend the pirate board games. And yep. I was like, okay, solid choice, everybody.
Yeah. You can kind of see it in this photo, maybe, but yeah, they're in the center, like right amongst, like surrounded by pools of water and you know, fake trees and such. And the water slides overhead is all the pirate board games. Wasn't aware of Pirate Borg really before we went to this. Did you have any awareness of Pirate Borg?
Yeah, we've played it. I played it with Max and Christian. I think Christian might have run it actually.
Really?
So, interesting. So of course it's a spin-off of Mork Borg. Did I get the right name for that?
Yep.
And you know, kind of mostly classic D&D mechanics type thing, and you know, D20 based and all that kind of stuff. I've played a game for maybe that ran about three sessions. We had some pretty cool characters, so I have kind of a warm spot for that. Thumbs up to Pirate Board. They did a great job.
Interesting. Yeah, I was not really aware of this game prior, and at this point now I'm thinking like, oh, maybe I should go check it out, right? Because of course the creator of Pirate Borg is also the host of a podcast called Ship of the Dead, and it was actually his podcast that hosted one of the talks that I went to. That was the State of the OSR talk, unfortunately I had to go run my game, so I missed half of that talk. I was sat in the panel, listened to them for about half of it, and then left. And so that's also on my notes here, is to like go back and find once they post it, because of course they're a more traditional podcast, they don't live stream like we do, so they're gonna edit it, right? and so they haven't posted it yet as far as I know, but once it's posted I want to go in there and listen to the State of the OSR talk and hear the rest of it that I missed.
Great. Yep. I like that game. I will say, you know, it's pirate themed, it's supernatural themed. It's maybe a little less unusual for me because I'm used to D&D being infused with horror elements and Lovecraft elements, so it certainly looks like you know, it's the kind of game that I like to play. You know, one thing I will say, and now that I'm thinking about it, for me, the one thing that's a little tricky at Gary Con or maybe any other con is, for me, actually dining is actually a little bit challenging. And whatever it was that you said, Paul, at some point of like, well, the whole world doesn't run on Dan time. I am, you know, I run a little bit later in the day, And I am accustomed to having, you know, I actually do normally have a meal at like midnight or 1 o'clock, and there kind of aren't any options around for that. So thank God Paul was there to help me out and was like grabbing a dinner to go that I could have later or something like that. And that he was a real lifesaver.
So I love that, for me, that's a little bit later is midnight or 1 a.m. for dinner. Yeah. Yeah. I think, Dan, that outside of New York City or any other like major metropolis, you're probably going to have trouble finding that.
So I've been told.
I have some friends up in Portland, Maine, and they're constantly telling me like what a great foodie place it is, and we should come up there for restaurants. And I'm like, well, it's a bit, you know, after work, it's a bit of a long drive for me to get up there, but we could do a late dinner. And they're like, yeah, no, after 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Nine?
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Most places outside a big metro area, well, I have to remind myself, and it's I do run into that quite a lot when we are wandering. So just keep that in mind, folks. Probably, maybe you're fine with that. It's just a Dan thing. Who knows?
I'm also used to having to like really think about and plan food at cons. As a vegetarian, I've parts of the country, like say the middle of Wisconsin, are maybe a little harder to find vegetarian friendly cuisine than the coasts.
Yeah. So one of the things that I did this time was I actually spent more of my schedule. So 4 slots on my schedule were set up actually running stuff, which was amazing. And then the majority of the rest of the time, I was actually signing up for seminar sessions, and I was not signing up for a ton of games to be a player myself. And I might have had 2. And then actually had to back out of 1. And so most of the time was in the seminar sessions. And I find that, I don't know, I guess I'm excusing that, is like, it's actually really cool to really amazing panelists, many of whom have been my lifelong heroes for decades, frankly, is to sit into the seminar room. They have kind of a smallish auditorium that's called the Swinghurst room. Sit into a comfy chair for an hour, get to listen to other people chat about, to me, fascinating things, and me not have to pour out a whole ton of energy. being an interesting character and helping other people and being like, oh, I'm enthusiastic about your game and all this kind of stuff. And just be kind of chill for an hour and be comfortable and relax and hear, just let some information hit me. And then go and, you know, maybe host an event or something like that. Was for me kind of a nice dynamic that I haven't done in other cons before. So among the people I got to see, right, they had and you know, it's small enough that intentionally or accidentally, I wound up having really nice conversations with, you know, I get in one seminar and there's somebody who's not scheduled and I go up, I'm sorry, I didn't catch your last name. Who are you? Well, it's David Wesley, right? It's David Wesley, the initiator of the amazing Bronstein games that, you know, predated, D&D. And of course, Paul, you've played with him, I think, last time, right?
I did, last GaryCon that we went to 2018, I played a Bronstein game with him. Yep.
Yeah, right? And so I probably embarrassed myself a bunch of times because I can't recognize some of these people on site. I just know names. So I wind up having a really fascinating, everybody else filters out of the room, and I have a fascinating 30-minute conversation one-on-one with David Wesley until the next seminar comes in and has to boot both of us out of the room, right? And then the person who's having to boot us out of the room is Zeb Cook. And so, you know, so the next seminar, Zeb Cook's running that, and then, you know, I touch base with him, and, you know, we actually hung out for a while with he and his lovely, lovely wife, Helen, another night, which was amazing. And I got to have a really, you know, some really interesting, maybe brief conversations with, you know, Jeremy Crawford was there. I got to find, you know, I finally tracked down Doug Niles to have a couple words with him. You know, obviously Matt Finch and his wife Susie were there, and we hung out, and there are like some of our favorite people, and on and on and on again. Was just a really amazing series of times that you can have some interesting words with these people that you've never heard anywhere else. So to me, that was just completely invaluable.
Yeah, that is a good time. I'm amused by remembering that we had a kind of drive-by interaction with Stefan Pokorny, who is, of course, on The Big Bad. It was so brief of him just walking by, and I go, "Hi, Stefan," and he shakes hand. "Oh, hi, how are you doing?" And he moves immediately on, and I'm like, yeah. I don't know if it even registered in his brain who I am.
Yeah. And now, to be clear, okay, part of the reason why that was happening, what and I wasn't aware of this, so Paul clued me in that this was even occurring, is that Saturday night, Stefan was host of an enormous friggin' party in the main lobby that called, what, Stefan's Metal to Midnight? So it started at 9, it went to midnight, and he's playing metal music on the overhead, and there's, I don't know, 200 people hanging out in the lobby bar area. And he's trying to host this enormous event. So it's no surprise that he was doing 100 things all at once. I didn't know that. Tell me about the ticketing issue for that, Paul, because I'm still tickled by it. You know, I didn't know what I was going to be funny. There.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because at the smaller cons, I think this kind of thing just happens organically. Certainly if I go to Total Con or Rising Phoenix Game Con around here, after the last game, people go to the hotel bar and hang out, right? And it just happens. At this one, he actually listed it as an event. It had something like, I don't know, 50 tickets. And there was a disclaimer on it that was like, you know, a ticket is no actual guarantee that you'll get in. Also, you know, supposedly signing up for this event won't block your calendar, so you'll be able to do other things concurrently, potentially, which did not turn out to be true. But and I think from what I had heard, he had brought one or two kegs of beer to just freely available to anybody who showed up. Right. So I'm like, immediately I was thinking like, oh, it's going to be swarmed. Free beer. People are going to show up and it's going to be swarmed and we're maybe going to not get in. But you know, it's in the main lobby of the main space. Like, yeah. Everyone walks through that space. I can't imagine how they would have ever checked anyone, right? About, do you have a ticket to this or not? We just walked in and there we were, and we were there.
Right. So that, I mean, so delightful. I don't know what prompted them to think they were going to be able to successfully ticket. But another highlight, I didn't have that on my radar. I actually was signed. That was the game that I backed out of, actually, when Paul informed me about that. And I'm like, they're saying that even ticket holders might not get in. I don't have a ticket. I'm not on a wait list, but I'm going to try anyway. I mean, there wasn't any security at the event.
Honestly, I think really the only real reason to list it as an event was to get people to know that it exists, which worked, right? I didn't know it was a thing until I saw it in the schedule, and I was like, "What's that? I want to go to that."
Yeah.
Got myself a ticket, put it on my calendar. There you go.
Were correct.
It was a good time.
Yeah, that was fantastic. You know,
Dan, it seems like the theme here is that you really enjoyed the Hobnob. The rubbing shoulders with the old school elite. Yeah.
Which is interesting because
it is something really unique about GaryCon, right? Not just in that it attracts those specific people, but also just there's something about the size of GaryCon. What is it? It's like, I think, 4,000-ish people. Most smaller conventions you go to don't have a big panel system like this one, right? Even when we go to Rising Phoenix Game Con, there's one room for panels, and I would say most panels are sparsely attended. You know, it's usually the much bigger conventions that have a bigger panel system, because panels are nice for giant conventions because they can hold more people, right? You can get a whole bunch of people in the room and all listen to someone talk. And it's more common at things like, say, PAX or Gen Con or that kind of thing. So it's interesting that it happens here, but it happens at a somewhat smaller scale. So you get a little bit more of an intimate setting, and you can then potentially go and have a chat with the panelists at the end.
Yeah.
It's not unreasonable to think, oh, after this panel's over, I'm going to go up there and chew the ear of one of the panelists. Absolutely happy.
And of course, Luke Gygax, you know, who runs the whole thing, has the deepest roots, right? There's nobody with deeper roots in the hobby. And he both has, a long history of knowing everybody, and really puts in an enormous amount of energy, and is both a great guy and really cultivates this network of people, of older people and newer people who are involved in the hobby. So I really can't imagine having a larger list of truly stellar guests throughout the entire weekend. And, you know, big kudos to Luke and big kudos to his staff for, you know, just an enormous roster of fantastic people to pack the seminars and, you know, be part of the overall mix. You know, so I'm at one, you know, a couple of highlights. I'm at one seminar. I think it's got Keith Baker is hosting it. And I'm forgetting two people. And then Jeremy Crawford's on the end, who, you know, used to be the head of D&D and is now at Darrington Press. And so, you know, I ask a question and then the seminar wraps and I have a really nice, like, I don't know, 15-minute conversation with Jeremy Crawford. And, you know, how do we get on this? Like kind of the legacy of D&D. And he wound up saying something that I've never heard from him or anybody else. As I said, you know, as, you know, someone that studies these things, I can still find specific sentences that were written by Gary Gygax in original D&D that are still sitting there in the fifth edition books today. And, you know, my thought all along was that I'm doing some kind of archaeology and this was kind of a semi-accident. And Jeremy says, oh, yes, I put a lot of effort into making sure that was the case. There's certain phrasings and sentences by Gary that just really really sets the tone and the flavor of D&D. And I worked very hard to make sure that they were maintained. And in some cases in fifth edition, some other editor struck them out. And I came back in and no, we must keep the sentence by Gary in the books. And so that was something I'd never heard before. I thought it was really fascinating. And it's funny, you know, I don't play a lot of fifth edition, but boy, the things that Crawford says, I agree with him 98% of the time. His heart is really in the right place. And occasionally he'll say something that I have only heard come out of my mouth previously, which is a little bit uncanny. So my respect for Jeremy went, you know, way up in that little, you know, really heartfelt moment that he shared that particular thing that was on his mind.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
Let's talk a little bit more. I mean, I know he's not officially with Wizards of the Coast anymore, but let's talk a little bit more about the presence of Wizards of the Coast at this, because that's really interesting, right? Like, they were an official sponsor, I think, this year.
They were.
Their involvement seemed odd, right? Like, or at least at initial blush when I first heard about it, I thought that's unusual. You know, usually Wizards of the Coast is a bit more forward looking, whereas GaryCon is obviously about celebrating the origins of the
They had I attended a seminar that had Luke plus those people. I don't know, you want to pull up the image of Luke in the center? So this is off my camera, so it's maybe not the very best photo in the world. So that right, you got in this photo, and I'm basically get to be right dead center in front of these folks. So there's Luke Gygax in the center. On camera left, there's Dan Ayoub, who is currently the head of all things D&D at Wizards. And on the right, there's Justice Armin, who is the lead of design of the actual D&D game. And I couldn't fit her in the photo, but I think Kara Kamen is off further to the right, who is the head of all art design for D&D currently. And so they had an hour-long panel here on the past, present, and future of D&D. And the lot, you know, it was kind of pressy, you know, it was kind of press releasey type thing. Like Paul said, kind of surprising that they were there at all. Their main takeaways were that previously all the different D&D product lines were in different departments, and now they have consolidated all of them under Dan Ayoub here. So everything D&D, including the role-playing game, computer games, which he used to be head of, movies, other media, is all under one umbrella now. And so they can kind of mix and match or have consistent stories through them or stuff like that, which is kind of interesting. And then I think part of the announcement there is that they're bringing Luke in. They're bringing Luke back in to release new Greyhawk material in official D&D with Luke's imprint on it, as a matter of fact, which was... it seemed pretty stunning to me. So that's cool for Luke.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, that is very interesting, right? And I think you had mentioned of this panel that someone had told you that Wizards of the Coast basically has four major conventions they attend this year.
Yeah.
And GaryCon is one of those four.
Yes.
Which is just very interesting that they're, you know, I don't know, focusing in more, let's say, on the old school scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can see that they have this mission statement here on screen, one big party, and they are, you know, trying really hard to say, we do want to invite everybody, old school, new school. We want diverse players. We want diverse referees. We want everybody to find something. And there were a couple really heartfelt statements from, you know, Luke and Justice, who are like, we think, you know, we think that D&D improves our lives, and being able to pretend to experience life from another person's perspective, who is a different gender or a different race or a different place, enriches all of us. And I'm really eager to sign on to that kind of mission statement myself. So I gotta say, I support, you know, I liked what I was hearing from them. I will probably continue to play the D&D that I still play, but, you know, good for them.
Yeah. I'm curious to see how this develops. We have certainly, spared no amount of time being critical of Wizards of the Coast, on this channel in the not so distant past. They've made what we felt were some missteps. This is interesting. This feels like a movement in the right direction, which is great. I agree, right? That, like, I always have this bit of hesitance of just like, well, yeah, but are they going to produce anything that I care about?
Absolutely.
I'm curious. So, did they give any details about Luke's imprint? Is he making Greyhawk content, but that's targeted at 5e? Is that the case?
I think that goes without saying. They didn't say it out loud. I just assume that it's going to be targeted at 5e. And they showed a logo with, you know, Greyhawk with his name on it that he was going to be involved with. So I assume that has to be all fifth edition. Yeah. I will say, okay. So, and I can't help but say that, of course, and it happens anytime we have a guest on the show, I asked a question and it made everybody jump. and I guess you saw it, Paul. So I asked the question, like, what do you expect to do with OSR and what does CC stand for? I'm so sorry, everybody.
Creative Commons.
Creative Commons going forward. And everybody in the shot right here kind of went, and then threw it to a legal person who was standing at the back of the room that hadn't spoken for the hour. Wonderful gentleman, I think his name was Will, who was like, well, that's a decision that we're working on. We'll try to come up with we'll have an announcement some point in the future. And you know what? I even get that. And I said to them, you know what? I'm glad I'm not the one making this decision. So I get it. I tried to make it uncomfortable. I tried not to make them too comfortable. So that's hopefully classic DM style. I hope everybody appreciated that.
That's,
you know, just think about other folks. So if you can pull up the photo from the artist chat, Paul. And this is not the greatest photo because we were in the kind of this bar space that was poorly lit. So I really apologize for lighting this photo. But this was like a thing that Paul found that I was completely unaware of. So this was the last day. I was ready to leave, frankly. All the stuff that I had on my schedule was done. And Paul said, well, we have kind of a spare hour. What's happening? And there's a classic D&D artist chat. And so we drop into, for me, basically accidentally, this chat about old school TSR D&D production. And who's in this photo right here from left to right is Dave Diesel LaForce on the left. Next person over is Darlene Peckle, who made the famous Greyhawk map and all my favorite pieces in the first edition DM's guide and all this kind of stuff. Tony Skazudlo, who did a bunch of Birthright stuff. And then there is Jeff Butler, who did practically all the Marvel superhero stuff and a bunch of other stuff, and then Jeff Easley on the far right. And to me, every single one of these people are juggernauts of the D&D art legacy. And they really, with all artists on the panel, they really got into the weeds about, like, I prefer a pen versus a brush for this reason, or how do stippling, or what was this production process like at the time? And we couldn't do grayscale, and therefore I had to come up with some other whatever. And so for me, occasionally rubbing shoulders with my partner Isabel, I thought that was, again, a really fascinating chat. And then Paul and I had to immediately run the hell out, run out the door at the end of it to get to the airport. But that was just a random thing. We accidentally ran into at some point. And these are the people that we get to hear from as a result.
I think you probably can't make it out in this picture, but I recall also that Diesel had a little, flat standy face of,
Larry Elmore, I think.
Who was that? Larry Elmore. Of Larry Elmore.
Larry Elmore.
Little, like, pretending to be Larry Elmore and Larry Elmore in the group as well. I wonder if Larry Elmore was supposed to be there or something, or Diesel just thought it would be funny that he's
in. I'm unclear on that. And it sounded like he was doing, like, a surprisingly good job of puppetry of playing Larry Elmore as the sixth person. Yeah. I'm getting the impression maybe Elmore used to be part of these chats in the past and wasn't, and they felt they would be missing something without Elmore. Who he portrayed as incredibly cranky.
yeah. I'll mention that the big again the panel that I went to that I personally most enjoyed and unfortunately only got to see half of was the state of the OSR. But hopefully it'll be coming out soon on the Ship of the Dead podcast. But a great panel of just people talking about what is going on in the OSR right now. And you had Luke Stratton, who wrote Pirate Borg, of course, and is the host of Ship of the Dead podcast. Kelsey Dion was there from Shadow Dark. I'm trying to remember who else was there. Matt Finch was on the panel. Who else? There was a couple more. Brad Kerr, and I'm gonna mispronounce the last person's named horribly. I apologize in advance, but Yokai Gal, who is they're part of the co-host of the Between Two Karens podcast. So yeah, just like a great crew of people to sit there and talk about what is going on in the OSR today. What developments have been happening, and where's it headed and all that. And I guess it's the second or third time they've done this, this kind of state of the OSR address, if you will. It was really interesting stuff.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I'll recommend folks go check out the Ship of the Dead podcast by the time this is out there. Hopefully that one is, hopefully they've got the episode up.
Great. Fantastic. That sounds great. I got two other. I ran a Wizards Warzone game, and I think that as I get to playtest that without going too deep into it, like, I think it gets better all the time. So I'm trying to clean up how I run it, and I got compliments about how how well paced it was, and it runs real snappy and stuff like that. And I do think people had a pretty good time with that. One of our patrons, Mr. Jordan, I think I can say his name, won it. So good job, Mr. Jordan. You've been studying and paying attention. Good work. Came away with W in Wizards Warzone, so it was a delight. And one of the great things was, Paul, how many people we met in person. In some cases, they've been guests, but in some other cases, they're patrons and viewers of the show. And a bunch of people came up and said, you know what? I don't put anything in the chat. I don't attend the after chat. I'm a lurker. I just watch. But we watch the show. We really appreciate it. And boy, every single time that happened was a really spectacular gift, frankly, to get to actually meet people that we're usually just yakking at.
Mr. Jordan sends his thanks.
What's super well deserved, Mr. Jordan.
It was, I was surprised, honestly. And we'll get to this, I guess, in next week's episode. But I think the moment for me that was most surprising was doing the dungeon design dash and looking out at the people assembled in the panel room and asking how many people here actually watch the show. And like at least half of them raised their hands. And I went, wow, I thought it was going to be one or two. Maybe I was not expecting a whole bunch of Wandering DMs fans. That's fantastic.
That's truly delightful. It's truly, we don't go in expecting it, but it is a delightful gift. Every time.
Yeah. Really nice. Really nice.
Yeah.
So we'll be at Rising Phoenix Game Con later next month. In like 2 weeks. So, you know, come on out, Wandering DMs fans. Come watch us do it again.
I mean, get
some games with us.
Unless I just misheard, right? 2 weeks from now, we're at our Indie HelgaCon, and then 2 weeks after that, we're at Rising Phoenix. So it's April 24th. Yep,
I've flipped the dates. I apologize. So, okay, so we got 4 weeks. You got 4 weeks to get your tickets to Rising Phoenix GameCon.
Great. April 24th. Is when that starts, yes, and we love the folks at Rising Phoenix Game Con, so we adore hanging out with all those folks. It's great. Another thing, so two other real highlights for me, right, that really made the con was that I got to get into as a referee. I got to be one of the referees of the big advanced D&D tournament that's part of the Legends of Wargaming series. And the AD&T tournament is run and written and created by Paul Stormberg. I think it's the 12th year they've been doing it. And so I love tournament D&D. I know not everybody does. I adore tournament D&D. I'm just really feel honored to have been tapped as one of the many referees in that particular game. And so we had, I think around this was happening Friday night, and we had around 200 players in the whole tournament. I think there were like 17 or 18 referees scattered all around all the premises. Harold Johnson was one of them. Paul Stormberg was one of the referees. Just an enormous event put on by Stormberg. And I got, what do I have? I got Team 7. So they showed up. They showed up in the squad from the marshalling as Team 7. And serious, right? And they come to play, and they didn't all know each other to begin with, but there might have been like three separate groups that got glued together perhaps, and just they asked for that. What a sweet group of great AD&D players. And I love players sitting down. They are serious. They're going to use every resource. They are peppering me. They're making it, they're trying to challenge me running it. I'm furiously dealing with all the great ideas that they're trying to have on this really hard, challenging puzzle adventure that Stormberg wrote. When it was finally confirmed I was going to referee it, I got the packet. It's like an 80-page adventure. I was finishing reading it the morning of the tournament, right, furiously. We're trying to provide the full by-the-book AD&D experience. So challenging on both sides. Really hard. I think my team came in about halfway through the rankings or so, but just ready to play, real serious, on task. That is my favorite way to play D&D, frankly, and that's kind of a bucket list item for me. I got to be in the Legends of Wargaming tournament as a referee. Maybe didn't think that was going to happen, but for me, that's a bucket list item I can check off. And big thanks to Paul Stormberg and all the players, and that was. I love it. Love it to death.
And weirdly, weird footnote there. Turns out that one of Dan's players was a former colleague of mine from my time at 38 Studios. And we got to catch up, which was unexpected.
What a small world. What a crazy small world. I didn't know anybody at the table. And, you know, we said hello, thank you, peppered with compliments, great. Took off, wound up at the party Saturday, was chatting, and then turns out that he and Paul were co-workers and didn't even realize it because the place was so huge.
I will call out.
Uncanny.
Yeah, it was super. It was very, very strange. One delightful experience for me, also just a weird happy accident. I discovered that. Amy Vorpal was present at the con, who is. Yeah. A cast member on Dimension 20 and was part of the Upright Citizens Brigade. She was running an improv class, basically an improv workshop there, which I saw on the schedule. I was like, that's weird. Look at that. Right. And so I just added myself to the wait list and be like, oh, maybe I'll poke my nose in to see what's going on or whatnot. But it was limited to like 15 people. This is clearly just a small group. Do a 2-hour improv class. Well, sure enough, in the game that I was playing just before it, I get an email that says, hey, tickets available. Do you want it? I scooped it up. And so sure enough, I got to go to an improv class. There's Amy in the front taking a selfie of our whole group. And me back there in the back. And I will say, I didn't tell her, but I'll tell you this, Dan, and the rest of the world, that was my first ever attempt at improv comedy. So it was delightful.
Okay. 1 to 10, how easy it was for you to get into it, Paul. Was it, so 1 being totally didn't understand anything was happening, super challenging, or 10, I clearly knew how to do this?
I like 8 or 9,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty natural stuff. I mean, you know, improv comedy and D&D go in hand pretty well. And that was the focus of this, right? Pretty much everyone there was DMs. And she caged a lot of things in like D&D talk of, oh, imagine you're running this kind of scenario or whatever, you know, think. And even a lot of our setups were, you know, D&D themed. So it was all very easy to fall into. You know, honestly, the only part for me that was a little different and unusual was having a part where I had to just get up there and do something in front of everyone. And I'm literally just standing on like a little stage area with two rows of 15 people watching me. And I'm like, okay, well, that's okay. That's, you know, I'm not uneasy about that. I did a lot of theater as a kid. I'm not uncomfortable on stage, but that is not like.
that's great. I mean we talk about improv a lot on the show. I love doing it, and and 8 is just almost, I think, is exactly the number I would have reported the same thing when I took my first improv class a couple years ago. It felt like I had an enormous advantage as a longtime D&D player. It's like I had about 80% of this toolkit already, which was fabulous. And then, you know, the night that we did the design dash from the Swinghurst room, the event that was happening immediately before us in that same place was a presentation by Pat Kilbane, who used to be on Mad TV and has switched to doing gaming. He ran a hobby shop, gaming stuff. He does documentaries about D&D now. So we saw Pat wrap up, and then we're taking the stage from Pat Kilbane, and I chat a little bit, and I get to go, I'm amazed that we're on the same stage with you at the moment. I've loved your career. And I go, you know, and he says, what are you doing here? And I go, well, we're kind of doing a D&D design on the fly with kind of improvisational elements, right? And then suddenly I'm having a conversation about improv with Pat Kilbane. And and he's like, oh, you come from improv. I go, no, we're like D&D, and we've moved to improv in the reverse direction. And then I blurt out, and my girlfriend and I have a puppet improv show on YouTube. right? And he's like, Pat's coming. Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah, I can see how that would work. I'm like, where did this life come from? I'm so glad you got in that session, Paul.
Yeah. It was a happy accident. I was glad to do it.
So one other thing, right, the people on the Discord server have been alerted to is that there was a week-long, and big thanks to Paul for the support all through this, there was a week-long D&D Jeopardy tournament. And it was put on by wonderful, I met them at the con, wonderful people, a couple, Alexis and Curtis Guerrero, I think. And oh my God, they put in so much effort and thought so carefully about making a legitimate, challenging D&D Jeopardy tournament. I think they'd seen some in the past and were like, we can do a better Jeopardy tournament than that. They were big friends of Tim Kask's, and they hang out, you know, they're younger than us, but they hang out with a bunch of old school people. So they had questions from 5th edition and 3rd edition and original D&D, and there was a category of pre-D&D stuff and the people and the content, and there was one of like just all illustrations from covers of modules, and can you guess the module type stuff like that. So they semi-randomly picked the players, and I got in as an alternate on the second day. So it wasn't clear that I was going to be a player, but I get in on the second day, and there was an empty seat, and there was someone saying, oh, yes, I'm the D&D champion from a prior convention. And then Alex was like, oh, we need to fill in the seat. Please, sir, come fill in the seat next to Dan. And I'm like, God dang it. Why is this happening? And fortunately, you know, the categories worked in my favor, and it went very well. It went very well for me. And I did win that second day. And then that rolled me into the championship game on the last day. And here's a picture right here from the last day final round. And so there was another empty seat. And Curtis stands up and says, oh, you know what? We're going to have a surprise special guest player that we weren't allowed to tell in advance. And I'm like, geez, what is happening with this? And then, and again, I embarrassed myself because I couldn't recognize it. But in walks Chris Cox, the head of Hasbro, the CEO and director of Hasbro. Chris Cox sits next to me, and he's the special guest player that I'm going to be playing against. And then the gentleman on the end there is named John, who is one of the winner of, I think, the third day. And we're playing for the prize of a classic D&D's and Demigods book that's been signed by all the creators, right? And and it went very well for me.
Here's the final scoreboard for folks, so you could see. Maybe a little hard. Zoom that in on your screen if you can. If you can't quite make it out, but there's the final scoreboard. The scores are at the very bottom there. Looks like Dan is coming in at around $18,000. Am I reading that right? Yep. $18,000 for Dan. Chris Cox, $1. He clearly bet it all at
after
the
a
end.
Big bet. After a big bet, yeah.
Yep. And then John on the right is at $2,400.
Yeah. And you know what? Those are almost the same scores from the first day too.
Dan, yes, Wiped the floor repeatedly with everyone in this competition.
It was very satisfying. It was really, you know, it was both for me an interesting challenge for my D&D knowledge across the years. And also, we do watch Jeopardy here, like probably for the last year. It was also really interesting to get into like the actual Jeopardy flow of playing a game. And I wasn't entirely sure whether I was going to interface super well with that. But I did. It worked extremely well. And I was, after a couple of questions, I got some confidence to it. And I kind of, you know, I was, you know, in charge.
Yeah.
It felt great.
And I remember in the last round, he hit both daily doubles, and he was in such a crazy lead that in the second daily double, I think you bet fairly low to booze. Yeah. The crowd booed Dan for daring to bet low on his second daily double. And still got the question right.
Yeah.
Got the freaking question right.
Yeah, I'm just taking the daily doubles away from the other players at that point is what's happening. I mean, there was a little part of me, Paul, and you know I was saying something different to you at the time, but there's a little part of me that kind of wanted to be wearing the big bad t-shirt at that moment. Of like, yeah, bring it. I'm the bad guy here. Yeah. There's a request in the chat. Stephen Kennedy's asking, show us the book. So I did in fact get gifted with this classic D&D's and Demigods book. It's got the Forbidden Cthulhu and Nuon mythos in it. And then, Alex and Curtis went around and got it signed on the cover page by everybody that they could find at the con. And so among some of the names here, there's Doug Niles up here. There's Alan Hammock right here. There's Jeff Butler over here. And I'm so glad he dated it, right? Errol Otis, who is the amazing artist who drew the cover, drew this piece right here, drew the whole Cthulhu mythos, which literally terrified me as a kid when I had this book originally, completely bent my brain with his fantastic, horrific art, frankly, that really is to me the standout D&D artist maybe of all time. So I've said it a couple times. I did not think that this thing could exist. Never mind that I would touch it. Never mind that it's going to be sitting on my bookshelf at the back right here every time we do a show from now on. How about that? Amazing.
Well Amazing. Done. Well deserved, Dan. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And with that, we are out of time. Do you have any final thoughts you want to share about Gary Gunn?
That was just beat after beat after beat. I think I checked off about 3 bucket list items for myself in the 4 days flat. Big thanks to Luke. Big thanks to all of his staff. He puts on a spectacular event. Thanks to everybody that gets there and just really pours their love and their passion for all the different iterations of this game. And I'm just delighted that thank you, Paul. I could not have, gotten there as easily. You helped me out with getting fed. You helped me out with emotional support, getting through the competitions and stuff like that. Thank you for the design dash that we're going to talk more about next week. Because the material from Gary Kahn, Paul, could not fit in one single hour. So we're going to need an hour just to talk about that. And I'm looking forward to that next week.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think I have a lot less stories because the design dash was really what I was at Gary Kahn for. And so I'll have a lot more to say about that one in particular. I'm so glad we did it. And remind everyone, we're doing it again. So come on down to Rising Phoenix Game Con, April 24th to 26th. That's in Milford, Massachusetts. Check it out. We will be there. Dan, when's the actual, what's our time slot for the actual dash?
We are, I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't. I mean, is it Thursday?
I've got it here in front of me. Here we go. It is Friday at 7 p.m. We will be hosting it, 7 p.m. Eastern. That's when it starts. That's when the event starts. So it's probably like we'll start live streaming it for those who can't make it to the condos. Probably start live streaming it somewhere around, I don't know, quarter after or 7:30. We'll figure out how much setup time we actually need there. Right. Yeah. So we'll get that posted at some point. Yeah.
And then two demo games on Saturday. Right?
And then we'll both be running the game itself that we designed on Saturday. So
yeah.
Actually, I'm personally running it on Sunday. So I think you're running it on Saturday and I'm running it on Sunday.
You know, Paul, we've got so many conventions that what days things are happening are getting all mushed up in my head about what day is happening which. So that's great.
Yep.
That's great.
Cool. Yep. It's a good time. So come check it out.
Yes. We love that content.
Yeah. And that's that I think pretty much wraps it up for us viewers. If you have any thoughts, comments, questions, you want to congratulate Dan on his well-deserved win at D&D Jeopardy. Leave us a comment here in the YouTube video. We would love that.
Absolutely. And of course, remember that you can like, follow, and subscribe to us. We are on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, TikTok, Loops, GitHub, places like that. We have the handle Wandering DMs on all those sites. So please sally forth and hit that like button.
If you prefer to listen to this show in audio-only podcast format, those podcasts are available on our website at wanderingdms.com. Also, you can find us on various podcast carriers like iTunes and Spotify and Pocket Cast. If you're listening to a third-party carrier right now, listening to the show on a third-party carrier right now, and it offers the ability to do so, please rate and review our show. That helps other users of that site find us, and we really
We really do. And of course, huge thanks to our patrons who support the show here. If you'd like to join them, please visit patreon.com/wanderingdms. Every tier gets you access to our private Discord server where the conversation about all this stuff that we adore is happening 24/7. We have the best, smartest, wisest patrons, most charismatic as well. And so we would love to see you as part of that mix. And like Paul said, we will be there on the Discord server in about 10 minutes to continue the conversation in our live video after chat. So we hope that you can dial in and join us there as well. And don't forget that next week we'll be back, actually a little bit more Gary Kahn, talking about our design dashes that Paul and I both play tested. And we had very different experiences. We had completely radically different experiences. So we're going to need some time to hash that out, won't we, Paul?
We will. And I'll also remind everyone that with all these design dashes happening, that we will be releasing the final product of those design dashes in PDF form, which will be available on our drive-through account, drive-through RPG, also as Wandering DMs, or become a patron and you'll get them for free.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so look for all that and more. And don't forget that we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So please join us again next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then.